On the Empire Podcast this week, Nicholas Hoult drops by to talk about his new film, Kill Your Friends, peeing on James Corden, and he comes up with a new pod jingle along the way. Plus the usual movie news and nonsense on the podcast. I can't wait to terrify people by dressing up as Mike Myers for Halloween.
Don't you mean Michael Myers?
No, I'll be going as a love guru. Yeah, truly, truly terrifying. Hello, pod, I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. And yes, it's Halloween, which means only one thing. That's right, it's Halloween. Unbelievable. Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Watch the Magic Pumpkin. You guys know that? Anyway.
You are the only big Halloween 3 fan here.
I'm not. I promise you. I promise you there are other Halloween 3 fans
sure.
out there. Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. This week I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal and terrifying cunning. First up is a man who will be going trick-or-treating this weekend. It's the scariest Jurassic World character of them all. Forget the Mosasaurus. Forget the Indominus Rex. He's going as Edmund. It's Nick Dissemblian.
Spooky Edmund.
Spooky.
It's essentially Edmund, but with some cobwebs on him.
Ooh, that does sound scary.
That's amazing.
89% of listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
Long-time listeners to the Emperor Podcast have no idea what you're talking about. And people who are listening for the first time have no idea what you're talking about. But okay, to put some context, Nick cameoed in Jurassic World.
Starred.
You say starred. I say cameoed as Edmund in one shot of Jurassic World in a crowd scene.
Yep.
Edmund is a British tourist who goes to Isla Nublar to pick up some ladies and gets involved completely off screen.
Gets involved.
He's the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of
Sounds
Jurassic
really
World.
Really seedy now.
Except
yeah.
with less, fewer lines.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then he got in some spooky adventures, hence
yeah.
the cobwebs.
Which yeah. will be seen in Jurassic World Edmund Adventures, the spin-off show coming to CBeebies. Mm-hmm. Which I genuinely would love to see. Next up, you've heard her already, is our resident geek queen, a lady who won't be going trick-or-treating this weekend. She's going Sam Ordining instead, which is where she goes to people's houses, asks them, Sam or Dean, and then if they don't understand, she invites herself in and makes them watch Supernatural from the beginning again, which I think is a fair thing to do, isn't it, Helen O'Hara?
That sounds yeah. great, and I feel like people would be really educated by that, because then they'd know when yeah. haunted, you need to find the bones and salt and burn them.
By bones, we...
Literal bones.
Literal,
actual bones. Okay, actual right. bones. Yeah.
I've got to confess, I've never seen an episode of Supernatural. Is it a scary show at
it
all?
Is actually genuinely a very scary show at times. Like, not always, but it can be truly creepsome.
Because of the abs.
Because of... There are no abs. I keep telling you, they don't take their shirts off. I've written in to complain and everything.
They never take their shirts off.
Almost never.
Okay, all right, there we go. My favourite is Sam, by the way.
Oh, you're so wrong.
Or Dean.
There you go.
Whichever one's played by Jared Eccles or Jensen Padalecki, one of those two. Right, as we've said already, it's Halloween.
Are you going to keep playing that?
Oh, yes. Which means it's time. Time to watch The Magic Pumpkin and answer your questions about scary films. We have a whole bunch, well, three questions about scary films, because we've answered loads over the years. Here's one from @songwarmonger, who asks, who or what is your favourite scary female? On film. I'd go with Julia from Hellraiser. This is a song warmonger. Or the Alien Queen.
Mm. Alien Queen's certainly pretty darn scary. I think my scariest ones might be some of the more ghostly ones. So obviously Sadako from The Ring. The Woman in Black. Who is...
I call her Ruth. She's just...
Ruth.
She's really lovely, actually, when you get to know her.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've just never spent that much time with her, so I just find her truly frightening.
What do you mean you don't spend much time with her, Helen? She's behind you right now.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's not good news. No. Even in the stage show, she's terrifying.
I've never seen the stage show. I really
Doesn't
want to see the stage show.
Doesn't she appear from behind? She just suddenly appears in the crowd, right?
I was up in the gods, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So she didn't appear behind me, but you could just hear the screams. And it gets to the point where literally when nothing happens, you get really tense because you're like, something's happening and I just don't know what it is yet. Oh, God.
Mm.
So, yeah, those ones are the ones that really get under my skin. Mm.
Nick.
Well, it's got to be the Dilophosaurus. I'm not just saying that because I want Chris to do his Dilophosaurus impression again.
Oh, God. All right.
Do your Dilophosaurus.
Like I don't have it ready yet. That's all I've had. Oh, all right, then. All right, this is Dilophosaurus. It's a largely visual impression.
It works so well, though.
Yeah, one day, if we ever do another live podcast, I'll do it for you guys. Despite repeated requests not to, I will do it.
Because you spray the gunk everywhere and you commit. I don't know, the first thing that popped into my mind is from my favourite film of all time, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because the answer to what is the best anything you can pull from that film.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But near the, you know, right at the end when the ark is opened.
Yes.
And you know, the sort of angelic figures are floating around and then their faces start melting. That for me was scarier than the faces melting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
Yeah, it's really terrifying.
Or the angel transforms.
Yeah.
And just goes,
You know, and everyone's screaming.
And a precursor of Ghostbusters Library Ghost a few years later.
Yeah, yes. I was just thinking that as well. Mm. Yeah.
Who gets a backstory in the novelization?
Really?
Yeah, because I was reading up on it for an article, and she gets a kind of an erotic backstory.
We were talking about the Ghostbusters novelization in the office this week, because people might run into, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is a childhood memory. We were reading Chuck Wendig's Star Wars novel. It's written in the present tense, which is something I've seen very, very rarely. And one of the only books, Helen, obviously you've read probably 35 books today already, so you'll correct me on this, but the only book I can really properly remember being in the present tense was the movie tie-in novelization of Ghostbusters, which clearly some guy had just been throwing the script and he just went, that's in the present tense, so I might as well. So Finkman picks up his proton pack and walks to the door, and it just really annoyed me, even back then. But I might be misremembering.
The Ghostbusters novelization is a bit gonzo, isn't it? It's
I can't remember. All I can remember is it really pissed me off.
It's called Ghostbusters the Supernatural Spectacular. And yeah, it was written by a guy called Larry Milne.
Larry Milne, who also wrote some other tie-in stuff as well, yes.
And he just went a bit nuts, I think, and just added a lot of background detail, which is not necessarily sort of approved by anyone involved in the film. But I do remember the library ghost has an erotic backstory involving sexy wood carvings.
Wow.
So pick that up. Ooh. You can buy that on Amazon or eBay for like 10p.
So my favourite scary female is Mrs. Baylock in The Omen.
The
late great Billy Whitelaw. Just terrifying from the off. So terrifying from the off, in fact, that you do slightly question Gregory Peck when he just kind of doesn't fire her immediately, because she's clearly evil and up to no good. But the bit where she, spoiler alert for a movie that's nearly 40 years old, the bit where she pushes Lee Remick out of the window in the hospital to her death, and she approaches very slowly from behind, and the music goes all dominoes, order a sizzler. It's that still absolutely terrifies me. And there's no makeup involved. There are no demonic voice. There's no contact lenses involved. There's no prosthetics. It's just Billy Whitelaw setting her face to insanity levels, and off she goes. So yeah, Mrs. Baylock for me.
Along the same lines, Mrs. Danvers from Rebecca. An amazing film, one of my favourite Hitchcocks, played by Judith Anderson. She is scary as heck.
Yeah, she's terrifying. Despite not quite being actually demonic at all, really.
Well, she might be.
Or is she, etc. Mm. It's that figure again who sort of has the kind of the power over you and has you in their grasp a little bit. Controls your environment. Yeah. You know, it's Nurse Ratched, I guess, as well, in
Nurse
Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, would be the same sort of person.
Annie from Misery.
Annie Wilkes, yeah.
Currently terrorising Bruce Willis on Broadway. Kathy Bates is, you know, I haven't seen the new stage version, but I don't know how you're going to beat Kathy Bates in that.
Laurie Metcalf's doing it at the moment, isn't she? Opposite Bruce Willis. Yeah, I'd love to see that if I ever got to New York and had a ton of cash, which is all very unlikely.
Are we counting Christine the car?
No.
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 No. Yeah, okay.
We said female.
Christine. Next you'll be telling me Chitty Chitty Bang Bang's not a person.
I would never tell you that.
It's interesting, isn't it? The cars are always women. They're always given female names.
Herbie.
Ooh, holy shit, you've blown this wide open. Instantly, you've just absolutely stopped me in my tracks.
Apart from
the most famous movie car of all time,
which other female cars are you talking about?
No, just generally speaking, growing up, I knew people who would name their cars, and they were always female.
But were the people naming their cars men?
Oh, they were demented.
Are these people
but
you
also
knew?
Also men.
In real life?
Yeah.
This is worrying.
But it's the same reason that, you know, they used to give ships female names or refer to them as she.
Okay.
It's because it was men doing, straight men doing the naming.
It's making the banana and the tailpipe scene and getting a whole new spin.
By the way, last week we were discussing great movie scenes set in stairwells, and it all got very messy, and we couldn't decide what a stairwell was and what a staircase was and whether we would allow indoor staircases staircases or outdoor staircases. And so as a result, we forgot to mention tons of great movie stair scenes. Thank you, the 745,000 people who wrote in saying The Untouchables. We kind of did skirt around it, didn't
we? It was
we?
In my mind, but I didn't say it specifically because we discussed
Battleship Potemkin. Yes, and we discussed Battleship Potemkin and we disqualified it, which therefore immediately, in my mind, disqualified The Untouchables.
Well, no, I mean, I knew The Untouchables was inside, but I was saying, well, a staircase is like Sunset Boulevard, therefore we're not talking about that.
Yes.
And therefore, for me, The Untouchables falls into that staircase thing. A stairwell to me is a room that literally only has stairs in it.
Yes, I agree.
So that's my excuse / reason.
I agree. A couple of people, I'm just going to very, very quickly go on this one. A couple of people said, a lot of people actually said 28 Days Later, the sequence where they run up the stairs to meet Brendan Gleeson and got the stairs barricaded off against the infected. That's a really good staircase scene. Home Alone 1 and 2. Comedic Genius says Dennis DuBrock. John Izzard has said, what about the Jones boys escape from Castle Brunwald in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, the last Indiana Jones film? That's fantastic.
That's good stairwell.
Yeah, that's good stairwell. Yeah, I find if I just sit down and think, the solution presents itself. All that sort of stuff. All good stuff. Tony Chaz, Warrior King, says, Five Hard Film Show. Surely the greatest one-shot stairwell action sequence. Try saying that when you're drunk. Surely the greatest one-shot stairwell action sequence. Wow. There's a sentence.
That's what the Warrior King. The Warrior King. He fights the stairwell, doesn't he?
The Warrior King. So yeah, thank you for sending in all those. And we knew about The Untouchables. We just deigned not to mention it. Right. Two quick questions and then we're going to move on from Halloween. Thank you for sending in. We got loads of Halloween questions. We just chose three because we've covered a lot of stuff in recent years. So here's one from @LatSledge1981. What scary film stuck with you from childhood that no one talks about? Mine is Lady in White, starring Lucas Haas.
I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know this either because I was too scared of scary films as a kid to watch many. The one that sticks out to me, but everybody talks about it, is Watership Down, which I still am not sure I choose to watch because it's still really, really unpleasant. The scenes with the rabbits getting buried when the bulldozers sort of destroy the warren are just some of the most traumatic, terrifying scenes ever committed to film, for my money. So yeah, that completely did my head in when I saw it as a kid.
Bloody hell.
Phil and I were not really allowed to watch scary movies. So I'm still kind of catching up on all horror stuff. I'm nowhere near as big a horror buff as you, Chris, or a lot of other people at Empire. But yeah, Return to Oz is the one that sticks in my head. I was allowed to watch that because it was a PG, but it shouldn't have been.
The Fools.
It should have been X.
The Fools.
Because it's really frightening. There's a guy who looks like Lee Hurst who rides around on weird, he has long arms with wheels at the end of them. And it's a terrifying movie.
It is a terrifying film.
Yeah.
Also, weirdly enough, Sleeping Beauty, the Forest of Thorns.
Yeah.
That image, for some reason, just scared the living crap out of me when I was a kid. Just absolutely just got to me. It was like, why would you go? I don't understand. Why would you go in there?
Yeah. Don't go in there. Look at it. It's all spiky.
She's evil. She's clearly evil. What are you doing? I'll quickly run through a couple that stayed with me from childhood because I was allowed to watch horror films. And quite often, my mum and dad didn't know we were watching horror films. I mean, it was okay. It was permitted. But I always have these images, these memories of going into video stores, ask your parents what those are, or Google it, but going into video stores and just being transfixed by horror film covers and horror film posters. And some of the most enduring images, for example, the poster for Dawn of the Dead or the poster for Squirm, the killer worm movie, which is not that good. They just stuck in my brain. But scary films that stuck with me from childhood that no one talks about. The Medusa Touch, Richard Burton film, which he plays a man who can predict the future.
It
has a really creepy, unsettling ending, as does a really largely terrible film called Harley Quinn, which starred Robert Powell. And again, it had the end of that film. There was a shot at the end of that film of a clown type figure. I won't give too much away, but that always just terrified me. That just stuck in my mind. And I would say probably there's a film called Superstition as well, which scared the living bejesus out of me. But it's a witch / haunted house movie. That's worth tracking down, actually. I'd say Superstition. That kind of stuck with me.
The Witches.
Oh,
the Witches.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Yeah,
I saw that last year on Halloween Day, actually, again, for the first time since I was a kid, and it's still terrifying. Angelica Houston. I got really frightened by Blink when I first saw it.
Blink?
Does that count?
The Madeleine Stowe
thing. I don't know why, because it can't be scary, can it?
I don't know.
Madeleine Stowe, and she's losing her eyesight, and there's a serial killer stalking her. It really scared me.
Oh my God.
I don't know why. I think I'm just scared of Madeleine Stowe.
I'll throw one more in very, very quickly. It's a film called The Evil, which stars Richard Crenna, which is about as terrifying as that sounds. But when you're a kid, you thought it was terrifying. It's about a group of researchers, or a group of scientists, or something who go to a house and you never guess what. There's a trapdoor in the basement and they're told not to open it because, ooh, bad things will happen. And of course they open it and it lets out Satan, who's been trapped in there. It's essentially the plot of Prince of Darkness, which is a much better film. But they let out Satan and evil things start happening to them. And then at the end of the movie, Richard Crenna and the female lead, whose name, sorry, I can't remember, descend to the gates of hell to meet with Satan, who's a little chubby fat man. And it's largely terrible. But there is a scene where a man drills through his own hand because he's possessed.
Nothing good has ever happened by opening a trapdoor to a basement.
No, just nothing good. Don't do it.
Don't open it.
Don't do it.
Don't buy a house with a basement.
Yeah, don't have basements. And no. Just wipe them all out.
Wipe them out.
Right, the last question is from at JFG in Digital 3D, who says, what film has the scariest, most haunting score? I'm going to be Johnny Generic and say The Exorcist.
Can I be Jenny Generic and suggest Halloween?
Yeah, of course you can.
I want to give a shout out to John Williams' amazing haunting score for Brian De Palma's The Fury, which I actually think is way better than the film. The film has got its high points. Kirk Douglas is great in it, and it's got an awesome exploding head at the end.
It does.
For me, it's all about that score. Absolutely love it. So yeah, go on YouTube, have a listen.
And a rare non-Spielberg John Williams score as well.
Yeah, very good.
Very, very good indeed. And then of course there's other ones, obviously, you know, Goblin's Suspiria theme, and most John Carpenter stuff is very, very good as well. But yeah, I don't know. What is the scariest, most haunting horror movie earworm? Do you guys know?
No, I can't think of anything.
Can you think of anything as well?
No, nothing comes to mind.
Make it stop.
Okay, so if you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, then you can send it in to us via the usual methods. We're on Twitter at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. You can Facebook us, where we're Empire Magazine, of course. And you can email us, podcast@empireonline.com. If you didn't get round to your Halloween question, there's always next year. So just don't die between now and then. Right. You know what I'm thinking, Helen?
What are you thinking, Chris?
Now it's time for movie news.
No.
Movie news.
No.
Movie news. Now it's time for movie news. Empire Podcast.
I feel like I'm trapped inside your head at the moment, and it's horrible.
It's a terrifying place.
Did you guys? Is this tune constantly playing in your mind?
It's constantly playing. Have you seen Halloween 3?
No, honestly,
it's terrifying. It's the one film in that franchise that doesn't have Michael Myers in it.
Groovy, baby.
So it moves away from that sort of stuff and flopped monumentally as a result, and then they went back to Michael Myers. But it's really, really good and creepy. And it's about an evil toy maker who wants to take over the world and end the world, essentially, via the medium of evil toys and toy masks and stuff. And that Halloween TV commercial plays all the way through, and it gets in your head, man. Gets in your head. So check it out. But yes, movie news. is there any? Or should we just... I'll just play this again, shall I?
Oh my God.
No, don't. God, we'll find some. Okay, I've got some news. Please don't. There is yet more news of The Girl on the Train, which is fast becoming the Steve Jobs of a steady stream of casting news. So we've had replacements in the cast. We've had Justin Theroux step into the role that was originally going to be Chris Captain America Evans, which is a slightly not obvious substitute, I will say. They don't strike me as having exactly the same energy, so it's an interesting recasting, but fine. Now, joining the cast, which also includes, of course, Emily Blunt, Rebecca Ferguson, Hayley Bennett, and Jared Leto, as well as Theroux,
It's a hell of a cast.
It's Allison Janney, aka CJ Craig, always good news. The suggestion is that she's going to play a police detective, so this is yet another great addition, I think, to that cast. Tate Taylor is obviously directing. He's the guy who did The Help and Get On Up. Aaron Cresta Wilson wrote the screenplay. It's based on the incredibly popular best-selling book. It's definitely going to be one to watch out for, I think.
Why did Chris Evans drop out?
I don't know.
Okay, should we ask him?
Yes.
Siri, call Chris Evans. No,
it hasn't worked.
Just thought it might work. But you're right, I think Justin Theroux is an interesting one, because you're right, he doesn't tick the same boxes as Chris Evans, does he? I mean, he's a very good actor, obviously, but he's older, for one thing, by about, 10 years?
Probably.
You know, not as big a star, I think that's fair to say. Is he the lead? Is he the male lead in the film?
I think it's very much a supporting role, I think, to the women in this particular case.
Well, it's certainly intriguing.
I've got some demented news.
Yes.
Michelle Rodriguez is going to star in the new film by Walter Hill. Have you heard this?
No.
The plot is as follows. There is a guy whose enemy basically drugs him, gives him over to a surgeon played by Sigourney Weaver, and changes him into a woman.
I've seen that movie.
Played by Michelle Rodriguez.
This is essentially Walter Hill remaking Johnny Handsome, isn't it?
I don't know.
There's another movie it's a remake of, but I don't want to say what it is because it's a spoiler.
Really? So there are already films with this plot? Because that seems like a crazy plot to me.
There is a film with a person who is turned into a woman without his consent.
Yeah. Anyway, Michelle Rodriguez is pissed. And the film is called Tomboy, A Revenger's Tale.
Ooh.
So I'm on board.
Revenger is a good word. Like, I don't Revenger. Think enough people use yeah. Revenger.
Because it's not a real world.
Well, I mean, there's that as well. Well, I think it might maybe once have been a real word. It feels a bit medieval.
Revengers resemble. I'm intrigued by that. That's, yeah, but Johnny Handsome was a film that Walter Hill made in 1989, starring Mickey Rourke as a man who is, it's not the same plot, but he's like a criminal who's left for dead and disfigured by his partners in crime, including Ellen Barkin and Lance Henriksen. And he's horribly disfigured, and then he gets plastic surgery and he ends up looking like Mickey Rourke, who back then that was a good thing to do. And he goes on a kill crazy rampage and he works his way back in with them, and it's okay. But this seems to be like an even more demented version of that. Mm. Yeah, cool. I'm on board.
And that's just reminded me, what happened to that Expendables movie which was floating around? That was going to have Michelle Rodriguez and Sigourney Weaver in it.
Yeah, I think it's still possibly floating. I'm not quite sure about
that. I think someone in Hollywood is just staring at a laptop. It's just got the word Expendables on a Word document, and he's just sitting there staring at it going, I got nothing, guys.
It's a floater, all right. There's no doubt about it. And then someone's desperately trying, it just won't go away. I don't know. They're talking about Expendables 4, but it was interesting that this week the Raid remake seemed to completely fall apart, where it lost its director, Patrick Hughes, who I thought did a decent job in Expendables 3, actually. And it lost its, you know, it's losing stars left, right, and center. So it had Frank Grillo and Ethan Hawke and people like that attached, and it just seems to be slowly fizzling. Mm. Which, on one hand, is fine, because we always will have the original, and it's one of the greatest action movies of all time, and that's great. Although I would have quite liked to have seen what America would have done with it, and Frank Grillo, frankly, would have been perfect casting. I think he would have played the building.
That would be great casting. He is very tall and iron-like.
He is.
There is a kind of horror-related news, I guess, in a way. There is a Lizzie Borden film being developed. Now, there was a TV movie last year with, I think, Christina Ricci. There is now going to be another version. It's as yet untitled. It's described as a psychological thriller rather than horror, from Belgian director Peter Van Hees. And Chloe Sevigny and Kristen Stewart are apparently lined up to star. So the story goes, basically, Lizzie Borden was accused of murdering her father and stepmother, and she was actually acquitted in the end at trial.
Axe-quitted,
but she remains a prime suspect. There is certainly one urban legend that she had a lesbian lover in the Borden's live-in maid, Bridget Sullivan, and the suggestion is that would be Stewart's role, with Sevigny as Lizzie. So yeah, I don't know if that'll happen, but it's an interesting one. It also recalled to mind Kim Newman, the horrorologist of this parish, once sent me a Halloween playlist, which includes the great, if you look it up online, it's online, Fall River Hoedown, which is a Hoedown musical number about Lizzie Borden.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's a heck of a lot better than the Halloween 3 theme.
Did he have that on?
No, he did not, Chris. No, he did not.
Please help us.
He did.
I've locked the doors. I can't leave.
It did also have, though, Dracula Cha-Cha-Cha, which I do recommend.
It's Dracula.
Yeah.
Dracula.
And hey, it's a good week for people who like more of stuff, because there's more stuff. There's more stuff coming.
I love stuff.
I know, it's unexpected stuff. But there is more Paddington coming, which is amazing news. Let's applaud that. Paddington is great, and most excitingly, Paul King is coming back for it, because I think he was kind of the magic ingredient in that.
Yeah,
that casserole, that metaphorical
that casserole of bear and marmalade
flavored casserole. Yeah, he aced that film. I think it was just I went in not expecting very much, and was delighted.
Oh yeah, magic. I honestly, I'm a Christmas guy anyway. I cannot wait for Christmas. It's about 2 weeks to go in my head perpetually, and I honestly, my wife and I are making lists of films to watch at Christmas, and obviously we've got the old sentimental perennials like Die Hard and Gremlins, but Paddington, which
and
is
Jurassic
not
World now, a Christmas film.
Jurassic World, a Christmas film.
Yeah, I had an issue with that.
Paddington,
actually,
that's
set at Christmas, and that freaking theme park, an American-owned theme park,
didn't have any tinsel
or Christmas trees. Like, what?
Maybe
seriously?
There was a kind of genetic hybrid tinsel dinosaur.
Ooh,
that's the
sequel.
Okay, in that case, I'm on board for the sequel.
The
Carry
Bulbasaurus.
The maybe the dinosaurs were just pissed they didn't get any gifts, so that's why they were.
And I could understand that. They'd be like, guys, make an effort. It's Christmas. Yeah, and there's not a single bauble anywhere in sight.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's understandable. There's also more Evil Dead. There are more Deadites coming.
Yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead has been commissioned for a second season.
That's correct.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Have we seen season one yet?
We have not, no.
In fact, it's not even been picked up in the UK, as far as I know.
It hasn't been, no.
It will be immediately now. But yeah, no, we haven't seen any of it. It has screened somewhere, right?
The first two episodes have screened. I think the first episode has screened at certain festivals, and it's about to hit American screens. And by all reports, it's very, very good. They're half-hour episodes, so they don't outside their welcome, and they seem to know exactly what they are. And the first episode is directed by Sam Raimi, and it feels, and I haven't seen this yet, and it's killing me that I haven't seen this yet, because I don't know if you guys know this, but Evil Dead 2 is my favourite film of all time. I don't think I've ever mentioned that in the podcast before. And I worship Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell like gods, and I've lived inside their walls for many years without them knowing, and I really desperately want to see this show, and it's not happening.
I hope every single episode starts with Bruce Campbell opening a trapdoor to a basement saying, I'm sure this time it'll be fine. And
I'm in there. Damn it, he's seen me.
Yeah, but no, this is encouraging. We want to see it. So,
yeah.
Bruce, Sam.
Oh, yeah. Please. That'd be amazing. By the way, going back to the Paddington thing, I went to the London Screenwriters Festival on Saturday because I was meant to host a panel with Bruce Robinson, but sadly he cancelled because he was ill. So I hung around and I watched a really interesting panel with Chris McQuarrie and Eddie Hamilton, the obviously director and editor of Mission Impossible 5. That was great. And then I watched a lecture from Paul King about how he wrote Paddington.
That sounds very formal. Lecture.
But it's a Paul King lecture, so it was really funny.
So he wasn't wearing a gown and a...
No, he was wearing Paul King clothes, so slacks and a nice jumper with a corduroy jacket, a brown corduroy jacket.
Action slacks?
No, they're from Next, but they were very nice. And it was a really candid, I think more candid than he was last year when he was promoting the film, lecture about how much trouble he had getting the script right. And he was really interested in talking about the tone of the movie and how he was really scrambling to find the tone. And then he watched Up and he just went, oh my God, that's what I want. That thing that makes you feel, which is, you know, I think Paddington really succeeds in that way. So, but hopefully now he has a handle on the tone that I'm really excited about Paddington 2. I just hope there's a story there, because he said one of the problems with Paddington was trying to find a story because the books are so episodic and so short. So how do you craft a feature length movie? But anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know that it was really good. So if you can get to the LSF next year, do so. I also want to talk about Alice Lowe.
Yeah.
We're talking about Tomboy, the Revenger's Tale, and Alice Lowe is directing her first movie, and it's called Revenge, which is great. But it's not just about the title. She's directing this movie over the course of 6 days in the next couple of weeks while she's 7.5 months pregnant, which is commendable, to say the least.
Badass,
sorts of stuff. I couldn't direct a film when I was 7.5 months pregnant. So hats off to Alice Lowe. It's really interesting because Steve Oram's which is currently out in video on demand, and kind of it feels interesting to me that the side series duo are now kind of splitting off and both doing their own things, and they're both absolutely demented. So if you haven't seen have I talked about on the podcast before?
You mentioned it, I think, but
it's out
people
now.
May not know a lot about it.
It's unlike anything I've ever seen, and I'm still not sure if that's a compliment, but you really have to see it, and I think it actually fits really, really nicely for Halloween.
How many as
eight.
Are in?
Thank 8 days.
I mean, it's going to come first in any alphabetical film list ever made, isn't it?
That absolutely.
Determined
to give you I'm just very, very quickly to talk about it before we go on and talk about Prevenge, but it's a conventional movie that's unconventional in only one way. There's no dialogue. It's a family tale. It's a tale of revenge. It's a tale of two warring factions in a London suburb. But there's no dialogue. Everyone speaks in monkey talk and ape noises and oh, oh, hey, oh. So it's people like Steve Oram and Julian Ryan Tutt and Toya Wilcox is in it, and Julian Barrett's in it, and Noel Fielding's in it, although they're never on screen together. And I sum up the movie this way. You'll absolutely know if this movie appeals to you. If you see just one movie this year in which someone ejaculates over a picture of Prince Harry, and then in another scene Toya Wilcox, the great 80s pop icon, takes a dump on the kitchen floor, then is for you. So there you go, seek it out.
I imagine that's a niche but fervent fan base there that you're talking about.
It's
because I only like one of those things.
Please don't tell us which. I don't want to know.
It's astonishing. You really have to see it to be believed. And hopefully Prevenge will fit into that same category. It's about a healthy pregnant woman who goes on a roaring rampage of revenge, isn't it?
On a killing spree, yes. And apparently her motivation becomes clear only as the film rolls on, so you don't necessarily know what she's up to at first. But I think it's interesting. So Lowe said, you know, people automatically assume you're a lovely person because you're pregnant. And I wanted to write something that defied that image of the pregnant woman as this safe, sweet, kind person. Motherhood is a crazy, interesting experience and it's rarely seen on screen. And that is true. Like, there are very, very few pregnancy movies, actually, given how many people go through it and what a weird thing it is. So kind of cool.
Exciting, yeah. We really like Alice Lowe here. She's great. And I will never tire of watching that episode of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place where she becomes a monkey Oh my god, it's just amazing, isn't it?
It's ah,
yeah,
which also has Julian Barrett and Noel Fielding in that episode, The Apes of Wrath,
and some poo.
Everything's coming full circle.
Amazing.
One big bit of movie news to talk about, which is that the new issue of Empire has dropped like a bomb from the sky, but a good bomb, and one you can read. And it's available in obviously in all good and evil newsagents. And Nick, you wrote the cover feature this month. Tell us what the cover feature is.
Yeah, the cover feature this month is DC and Warner Brothers' Suicide Squad.
Bloody hell.
Which is very exciting. We have not one, not two, not three, not four, but five covers, although you can only buy four of them. The fifth is a Joker-tastic subs cover. But yeah, we have Will Smith's Deadshot. We have Cara Delevingne's Enchantress. We have Jared Leto's Joker.
Never heard of him.
Perhaps most exciting of all, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn.
My favourite of all the covers.
That one is amazing. She looks great in this. But yeah, I got to spend 3 days on the set in Toronto over the summer. And yeah, saw quite a lot of stuff going on. And quite a bit of that is described in the article. It's Jared Leto's first interview about playing the Joker, because he went pretty deep into that one. And so he talks about that. He uses a rather colourful phrase to describe that experience for him.
He does.
Which involves the word prickhole. just thought I'd say it. We're on a podcast, you know. Can say it.
You could absolutely say it on a podcast.
I checked.
We've just said a Jacqueline and a Prince Harry, for God's sake. I think I've done it again.
Yeah, and you got David Ayer speaking very frankly and, you know, not so subtly, taking a major swipe at Marvel.
I've rolled up my sleeves,
which I enjoyed. He's an amazing guy to interview. David Ayer. He doesn't pull any punches. He used to be in the Navy and work in a submarine and stuff. So he just doesn't care. And he'll say anything. And so he was very fun to talk to.
It's a very, very good piece. As a regular listener to the podcast will know, I've been 100% behind this movie from the beginning. This is showing the way, I think, for me. I'm more hopeful now about Suicide Squad than
I'm excited, because it is taking some major risks. And I think that's to be commended in this age where everything seems to be, you know, the budgets are getting so high and everyone is playing it so safe. And they're swinging for the fences with this one. And it's exciting. It's a lot of characters that haven't been seen in live action before, so it feels very fresh to me. And then obviously a reinvention of the Joker. Batman's going to be in the movie, so who knows, will it be good or bad, who knows, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Indeed, cracking piece and good covers. I really love that Margot Robbie cover.
Yeah,
that might
fantastic.
Be because Margot Robbie's in it.
No I'm sure that's
no
that that's wouldn't good, sway your judgment, Chris. Come
no
on.
I'm better than that.
She gave me a piece of bubble gum. It's very exciting. I'm going to keep it forever. Or until it starts to smell.
Pre-chewed or
no
fresh?
No fresh in the wrapper. Yeah.
There's loads of other things in the magazine as well. It's not just about a Suicide Squad. So other features include, there's a first look at Duncan Jones' Warcraft, which is very, very good. Exclusive images, exclusive set report from our very own Dan Jolin, who is a level 12 mage lock.
I think 70. I think they're up to 70.
Oh, really? Is a mage lock a thing?
I don't know. But he's like, he's senior.
He's a senior administrator.
He spends 60 hours each week mining for goblin dust.
That's probably not far off the truth. We also have a feature saying farewell. Katniss Everdeen is leaving us with The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2, and this is our final Hunger Games feature. And then we go into our now traditional Oscar special, which is huge. Something like 30 pages dedicated to the movies that may or may not win Oscars come February. But we got features on The Revenant, of course, Alejandro G. Iñárritu's very ambitious, very audacious survival western, which has already, as I'm sure you've heard, attracted a reputation for having a legendary shoot, not necessarily for all the right reasons. There's profiles of some of the actresses who may be in the frame, including Brie Larson, who I saw this week, one Oscar prognosticator, say was the first lock.
I think she's the one to
of
be
the season
right now.
So that's for Room.
She's fantastic in that.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
You are allowed to say that.
I'm going to say it because that's a great film and she's really, really good in that.
So there you go. There's also Saoirse Ronan and Carey Mulligan in that section as well. And we have a feature on Carol, Todd Haynes as Carol, Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. There's a look at some of the directors that we think might be kicking up a storm over the next few months, including Tom McCarthy, director of Spotlight, who started the year by being the director of The Cobbler.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that anymore.
We don't talk about that.
Because Spotlight is terrific.
Yes. Then there's Johnny Depp in Black Mass, which I think Joel Edgerton's terrific in. Then there's The Danish Girl, Alicia Vikander and Eddie Redmayne, and then we have focus on some of the actors who may once again attract some spotlight. So there's Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Tom Hiddleston for the Hank Williams biopic, I Saw the Light, and Mark Rylance, who is, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently astonishing in Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies, yeah.
And then there's a big feature on
Steve
Jobs.
A little bit disappointed not to see myself in that section, to be honest.
I thought Edmund was in with a shot there.
Yeah.
In fairness, that's mostly leading roles, and you're obviously up for supporting.
It's a leading role in many ways.
I mean, in many ways, except for any of the actual ones.
Sure, it's just a page count thing.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. You are best Edmund in my book.
Thank you.
And there's a bonkers feature on the bonkers film Roar, which is a film that was shot in the 70s with Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith, and real lions, about a family terrorised by lions in the style of The Birds, but they used real lions. Elsewhere, we also have a first look at Jessica Jones, a new Netflix movie, which is coming out very, very soon. We're going to have this month's Pint of Milk is Richard Armitage. I'm not going to tell you how hairy his backside is. He didn't want to tell us himself. Paul Bettany talks about his first movie as a director, Shelter. We have a profile of Corin Hardy, director of The Hallow, which is a very good horror film, which is coming up soon. Nick Frost undergoes this month's Best of Times, Worst of Times interview. If you don't know what that is, it's where actors and directors talk about the best and worst moments of their career. And we have looks at Benedict Cumberbatch and the new Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar, as well. Plus, all the usual reviews and nonsense. And
yeah, because Chris always skips my section in this bit, I'm going to give a plug for Loofah!
Loofah!
Loofah in the back!
I don't always skip your section. You're the Edmund of my heart. It's a good Jurassic World thing.
We have an exclusive Colin Trevorrow viewing guide for Jurassic World, where he points out, it's a brand new interview, he points out all the little in-jokes and bits of trivia and stuff which have not yet been talked about, and there's some good stuff in there, and there is a Loofah set visit.
A Loofah.
I mean, a Luther set visit, though, like, isn't that just, you know, going round a corner in London?
It basically is that, yeah. Thanks, Helen. It's exciting. He talks about the new villain in the next series, which is basically a computer-savvy cannibal, because they're the worst kind of cannibal.
They are.
Holy cow. Plus, there's an Empire playlist, which this month is about movie shootouts. There's a great Hobbit trilogy quiz, and the crib sheet, which tells you everything you need to know about a film or a franchise, is Alan Partridge. There you go. £4.50 in all good or evil newsagents. I'll give you a choice. So, yeah, do go get it, because, you know, it's really good. And I gotta eat.
You gotta buy more copies of the Halloween 3 soundtrack.
Gotta buy more copies of the Halloween 3. I'll play it. Right, so that's that. Now it's time to have a lovely guest. Nicholas Holt. You like Nicholas Holt? He's a nice guy, right?
He's lovely.
He's a good guy. He was nice as a child star in About a Boy. He was lovely as Beast in the X-Men movies. You'd take him home, you'd introduce him to your parents. And he was just darn cheek-tuggable as Nux in Mad Max Fury Road. He's just nice. He's a nice guy. But not in Kill Your Friends, he isn't, because he plays a sociopathic record company executive who kills his way to the top and, along the way, pisses on James Corden.
What a dick.
I don't know. That's kind of like wish fulfillment for a lot of people.
Whatever turns you on, Chris.
Whatever turns you on. No, we like James Corden. And he came in recently to talk about the film, and I went along and spoke to him about relieving himself on Mr. Corden and much, much more. And during this, yes, he did indeed come up with a new jingle for the podcast. I'll leave it up to you to judge its merits. Enjoy.
We're delighted to be joined in the Emperor podcast.
That's good. By Nicholas Holt. How are you, sir?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Should we just keep doing this until
I'm only going to make noises throughout the whole interview, if that's all right.
That was your jingle.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like trademarked or anything. People can take it.
It shouldn't be trademarked.
Sample it. It's sure to be a big dubstep hit in a few weeks.
So you're in London, brief stop start to talk about, obviously, Kill Your Friends, which I imagine has a lot of headlines in waiting. Nicholas Holt, as you've never seen it before, bracket small print, if you've never seen Skins, close brackets again. But you've been playing a lot of nice guys lately. Was this an attempt with Stell Fox, who is possibly the worst person on the planet, to break the mold in a way?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, from previous times talking to you, there's always a thing for me of trying to do different films and play different characters and, you know, push yourself and learn and try new things. And this is one that I read the script. And I just found John Niven's writing kind of delectable in a way. It's that thing where he's very astute in his observations. The character is aghast at most things, and finds, you know, things ridiculous. Yeah. The world he's living in, but is also quite vile and has a real vocabulary on him, which runs beautifully. And it was just something, kind of exciting to try.
At what point did it have you? Did it have you at the opening scene? Not to give too much away, but I think we can talk about it because it's the first 5-10 minutes of the film.
Yeah, go for it.
You, you piss on James Corden.
Yes.
Now, it didn't say in the script James Corden.
No.
It just says a character.
But, a character. hopefully played by James Corden.
A James Corden type. But there's that scene, and there's an incredible rant later on about the record industry, which I thought might have captured your eye as well. Were there different points where you think, as an actor, okay, yeah, I want this. No one else can play this part.
Well, there was never a moment where I was like, no one else can play this part.
I must have it.
There were certainly moments where I was like, I really want to give this a go. Certainly the larger aspects of the character are fascinating when he does burst out, because a lot of the time he's very controlled and it's kind of bubbling underneath. And when things escape him or start to spiral downward and he feels as though he's maybe losing, then he goes quite extreme and does break out. And those are always kind of fun things to play, the different sides of the character, but also like the witty kind of side marks and the speed of his, you know, he's quite a smart character. And I think that's kind of, you know, the thing that I think makes you kind of enjoy being around him, hopefully, is that he's kind of right about quite a few things. not everything. Some of the things he says are cruel and it's, but you know, some of the characters, like James's character, the reason why you kind of go, well, maybe he deserves that, is because he's not very good at his job. And you sit there and he's an A&R music exec and all the thing, and he's essentially meant to be a barometer for taste, but at the same time, he doesn't know that Paul Weller is a singer-songwriter.
Precisely.
And so it's things like that that my character finds very frustrating, and I think are also amusing from the audience's point of view, because he is sometimes surrounded by not the smartest bunch.
Yeah, but you're not, for example, advocating like we all go out and piss on our bosses if they don't.
I can't condone it. I mean, I'd be intrigued to see what the results are. Don't. I can imagine someone tweeting me or something in like a week and being like, ah, I went out, drugged my boss, and then pissed on him and got fired.
Place, he's probably get a raise.
It'd be amazing. Exactly.
At some point in your near future, I imagine you're going to go to the States and promote this movie and possibly go on James Corden's chat show. That's going to be weird, isn't it?
Well, I've been on his talk show before.
But you haven't been on it promoting the movie in which you specifically piss on him.
No, that's true. It will be intriguing to see how we work around it. I mean, I think he's doing a great job on that show, and the kind of skits and bits that he does are really on point and funny, like the riding in the car, singing the songs and all that sort of
that's
stuff.
Right.
So maybe there's a way we can spin it where we do a live reenactment of the scene or something and I'll make sure to be well hydrated so the show doesn't run long. You don't want me getting stage fright.
No, you don't. Absolutely
not, when we've promised
not to freeze up
to the audience.
I've just realised in the Three Musketeers as well, he gets crapped on by a bird, so he's really running
does
the
he?
Gamut. He does, yeah. Poor guy, his film career
that
is
must
just
be something that he looks for when he's reading the script.
Goes to his agent.
So obviously, like, when I read the script and I was like, within the first 5 pages, I was like, oh, I get to piss on whoever plays that role.
Yeah,
he must have read it and gone, oh, well, that's for me. Rung his agent straight back after page 3 and been like, sign me up. They're like, do you want to read the rest of it?
No, I'm good.
No.
Pissed on by a Nicholas Holt type. I mean, absolutely, why not?
Job done.
Why not? You mentioned Twitter there. John Niven is on Twitter as well.
He's funny on Twitter.
He is very funny on Twitter.
He's a very funny man in general.
Okay, yeah. I mean, his tennis commentaries, for example. Oh.
I actually, because I'm not a huge tennis fan.
Okay.
But I did really enjoy reading his tennis commentary. Mm-hmm. It puts a real spin on the game. What was your favourite of them?
Anytime Andy Murray is involved, and we can't, even on the podcast as adult sounding as the Empire podcast, we can't quite repeat some of the words.
The language is so good.
He's really playful, I think, with his swearing, really inventive with his use of language as well, and that comes across in this movie as well.
That's the appealing thing, and Owen Harris, the director as well, was very clear on not wanting to make it a vulgar movie in a way, or just using language and trying to shock people, kind of then get offended and kind of, it's a turn off. Whereas when you see inventive swearing and strings of language and using terrible things in comparison to something that is completely irrelevant and things like that, that then has an amusement to it and a creativity which is then kind of enjoyable, as opposed to just being kind of a lad's movie, effing and blinding and being, you know, we're going to do something that's this. That is very unappealing, I think.
In terms of this movie as well, you're executive producing it for the first time.
Yeah.
What sort of executive producer are you? And what does an executive producer do? This is the big question.
It's a very good, very good question. it just means you're kind of involved a little bit earlier on in the process of getting the film made and stuff. I think for me, it's one of it's nice that they gave me that credit, but also something that I'm very happy being an actor.
Yeah. So it's not something you're looking to do.
I certainly don't think that I'm any smarter than the rest of the people on set.
Right.
And no, you know, there's times when maybe I have an idea and want to try something out, but a lot of the times, particularly, I don't know if you've read any other of John's books, but I read one post making this movie, and it was about a screenwriter and having to deal with dumb young actors in Hollywood more. But it was hilarious because I was reading it, and there's scenes when like this screenwriter has to go and meet actors, and the book luckily was written a long time before I had met John, so it's certainly not based on me. But it is that amusing thing where actors a lot of the time, like sometimes, and I sometimes bear witness to it as well, where actors are trying to give notes and stuff, and you can just tell it's like there's either an agenda or and it isn't right, or there's some strange thing that it's more coming from a vanity place or whatever it might be than a story and character thing. So I'm certainly someone who, yeah, lets people who know what they're doing do it, and then occasionally I'll be like, maybe this, maybe that, whatever, but no, but not for long. It's not. Yeah,
you were born on the cusp of the 90s, and the film is preoccupied with the 90s, it's set in the 90s, and it's filled with 90s music. Yep. Makes me feel really old, first of all. But you know, what sort of research do you, are you a 90s music kid? Is this something that's very much in your wheelhouse, or is this...
I had to do a quiz earlier. Someone did a quiz for me.
Oh my god!
On the 90s, and they were holding up pictures, and I didn't recognize like the Backstreet Boys, and
nobody recognizes
Backstreet Boys. Garbage, and like a few bands. I mean, admittedly, What's the Story? Morning Glory was one of the first albums I bought and still adore. And then I remember sneaking into my brother's room when I was around that sort of age and like listening to his Walkman, and he had like Fatherland, the Prodigy album. I listened to that, and my brain being like, "Wow, what is this? This is amazing!" That's amazing to have like tracks from Oasis and Prodigy, like that people have kind of, you know, let us use in the film at discounted costs or whatever, and, because you know it's not a big budget movie, and like Radiohead,
no, it's fantastic,
Karma Police and stuff, because they're, you know, important to set the tone of the movie and what's happening and make it feel realistic. So that's very kind of them to let us do that. But in terms of like research for the movie, I didn't really listen to a lot of 90s music because my character really doesn't care about the music that much.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as it's profitable.
But how do you research something like this? I remember asking Sam Neill once how he researched playing the Antichrist in Omen 3.
Oh, I just went through the... Yeah. I just went nip down to hell quickly. And,
I just leafed through the yellow pages. He said, well, it was tricky because there aren't many of them around. And I imagine with something like this, I mean, obviously there are music executives you could talk to and whatnot, but no one's going to come forward and say, yes, I am as bad as Stealth Fox is. I mean,
he is a blend of people that did exist. John Niven did work as an A&R guy. I mean, first of all, the book's written from Stealth Fox's POV. POV, that's such an actor term. We're talking about a book. That's horrendous. From his perspective.
Okay.
And that means that from reading the book, and that wasn't always the case with the book, that it was originally written not from that, and then he switched the book around. That was kind of the key to unlocking the book becoming what it is, was writing it from his perspective. Oh, no.
It's actors. Fine. It's a film podcast, man.
Actors.
POVs are absolutely fine. You can even say mise-en-scène if you want. It's all good.
You join us here, extreme close-up. So the book is very useful, and reading that and just having that in the back of the mind, even when it's a scene that's not in the book or whatever, just having that commentary and his thoughts of what he would think of people and judgment and the fear and of, you know, as much as he despises the general public, as he puts it, it's also what he's so scared of becoming, because he feels himself as being an elite music kind of, I don't know, hedonist. I read John Ronson's the psychopath test, which is interesting. I don't see Stealth Fox as being a psychopath. I see him more as just a product of the environment.
Is he a sociopath? There's a distinction.
Yeah, he has tendencies. I mean, he certainly doesn't have empathy or quite a few of those things, but he is still kind of vulnerable in a way. So there's that, and then hanging out with John, and I did meet quite a few A&R guys, even people that I know are kind of loosely characters based on them, which is really intriguing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just seeing how they were and seeing how they responded to me and their general aura was fascinating.
Well, I said a few seconds ago that people might not want to be related to Stealth Fox.
I think at times there's a bit of pride almost.
But yeah, when Gary Glenn Ross came out and suddenly lots of real estate salesmen wanted to be associated with Alec Baldwin's character. We want to behave like that.
Yeah.
I imagine it's like this as well.
Yeah. I think from what I've been told, there's one person that says that they're Stealth Fox, that it's based on them, that it's not. It's nothing to do with them. And so they're obviously, I don't know what's going on in their head, but it's that thing of, I don't know, fame by association maybe somehow. And obviously the books and the film, you know, very heightened and embellished, so no one's admitting to murder by doing that. They're just being like, yeah, I was the dude, I ran around and partied hard and did that and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, absolutely. You've had a cracking year so far. You've just finished Apocalypse. Mad Max Fury Road is one of the films we've absolutely adored this year.
Oh, thank you.
And that experience for you, I mean, for example, that line, what a day, what a lovely day, that became that film in many ways. It's said in the Empire office on a virtually daily basis.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
In bad Knox impressions, I have to say. But you know, for you, has that line taken on a life of its own? Have you heard it since the
movie? Strangely, it's something that I probably say more regularly than I even notice. I do just wander around going, oh, what a lovely day. and not even think about it. It is kind of cool for it to have taken on a life of its own. And particularly, it was certainly, that was never the intention or thought on set, you know, it was just purely in the moment of that character and everything. So for it to become kind of a tag for the film and people to take it on and have a life of its own, that's, I've never experienced that before. And it's cool. I like that. Today I just flipped through Twitter not long ago and someone had sent me a dub smash of it. And I'm
really?
A big dub smasher. I spend a lot of time on the X-Men set when I'm in the Beast makeup making dub smashes or in just in life in general.
Right.
And someone, that's the first time anyone's ever done a dub smash of one of my, a line that I said. So
was it just, was it someone just a regular
No, it was
dub
someone
smasher,
also
or?
In full Nux roleplay.
What?
Yeah, so.
No way.
Yeah.
You got to show me that. Was the Nux makeup a relief in a way after Hank, after Beast?
Once you're in it, it's a lot more comfortable for sure. Around the same sort of time to do it. They've got the Beast makeup down to just over 2 hours now. It's always just good to do different looks.
It's such an amazing look. It's an amazing film, as I said. And George was telling me that the Lovey Day line was recorded live. It was one of the few lines of dialogue in the film that actually was held over from the live recording.
Yeah,
set.
Nearly pretty much everything else was dubbed because it was so loud. We'd never be able to hear what was happening.
But that one, it lasted. Brilliant. Yeah. Nicholas Holt, it's been a pleasure. Do you want to see us out with a jingle?
Bom, bom, ba-da-da, bom.
It's pretty good.
It's really difficult to not just imitate another song.
That was Countdown.
No, that was
Countdown.
That would be Countdown. It was kind of really similar, and I panicked halfway through and was like, you're doing Countdown. And I'm like, and then now maybe it was Countdown, just slower.
It was bum bum, ba bum bum bum.
It's different. Music isn't my strong point.
Which is perfect for this film.
Although, I was watching TV the other day, and this is completely random and off on a tangent. And you know when there is a jingle at the end?
Yeah.
The jingle at the end of, I can't remember what it was advertising, but their jingle was literally, nyam, 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 nyam. I'm sure someone got paid a fortune for writing that. And I heard it, and I was like, it sounds like the person who got paid to write that jingle literally just went, nyam, 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 give me the money, and that was it. I couldn't stop laughing. I recorded it, went back and listened to it numerous times. I've got it on my phone. I was like, how is that? How did they let that as a jingle? It sounds like you're just taking the mick out of someone.
It
sounds like the noise you make in the playground when you're like, how is that good advertising or a good jingle for your company that I'm guessing you want people to spend money on?
It's worked. It's stuck in your head.
It's worked for me.
You recorded
although
your phone.
I can't remember what it was.
You say that, you're probably in your house, you got 55 for the product. You're just getting a new truckload of stuff.
I've
pulling up today.
Lifetime supply
of whatever the product
of
is.
Whatever that was. winging its way to me.
Nicholas Holt, Jingle King, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
The last time Nicholas Holt was here, there was a snowstorm and we feasted on a cake made of brains or a brain made of cake. One of the two.
That's true. I remember
oh my
that.
God.
Yeah. I remember that.
That's proper.
He brought the cake along?
No, we'd got it earlier in the day.
Okay.
But to promote the film, honestly, Warm Bodies.
Did he have some of it?
He did, yeah. It was delicious.
Well, there you go. Nicholas Holt there. He's very nice. He's very nice. Right. Movie reviews.
There aren't so many movies this week, are there? What with Spectre basically coming out on Monday and being expected rightly to essentially steamroller all other films in the UK this week.
Yes.
Because that's what happens with Bond movies.
I've never seen it like this. Usually you get someone who counter-programs something against the big juggernaut. Even Star Wars is opening up against Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Sisters and the Peanuts movie as well. But Spectre just has, they've been running for the hills, you know. So there are a couple of films that are going up against it. Helen's going to talk about them very, very quickly. One is very good. It's Black Souls. Helen.
It is, yeah. It's an Italian crime movie. It's a sort of story about three brothers and a son and the family relationships basically in this crime syndicate, in this crime family. I wouldn't say it's not a Godfather type epic. It's more like Gomorrah, I would say.
Yeah.
A little bit more of that kind of modern Italian edge. A little bit Sopranos-y at times though, you know, a little bit sort of wannabe Sopranos almost, but it's a very kind of oppressive, almost claustrophobic story with them all kind of caught in this life, in this world, and the tension kind of does keep up and keep you going. So, really good performances. We gave this 4 stars.
4 stars indeed, and it's also 4 stars for Under Milk Wood, which is Kevin Allen, brother of Keith Allen, his adaptation of the Dylan Thomas poem, the epic Dylan Thomas poem, which has now been adapted into a film starring Lisa Vant and, of all people, Charlotte Church.
I mean, you can't say she isn't Welsh.
You can't say that.
So, yeah.
It's broody and bawdy and kaleidoscopic, and she's very good, Charlotte Church, in it, actually. So there. So suck it. We gave that 4 stars as well. So the thing about those two films is that it's going to be very hard for you to track them down. I think they're going to get very, very limited releases this week because of the Spectre juggernaut. Now, of course, we reviewed Spectre on last week's show. We gave it 4 stars. Really intrigued to see now that it's open, what people are thinking about it and what people are saying about it and how people are reacting to things that happen within the film. We do have a spoiler special lined up for Spectre. I did talk to Sam Mendes for quite a bit of time about the movie, but we're not going to release that until the movie is opened in the States. So it's out in the States next Friday. So the spoiler special will either be up around Friday or more like the Monday. So Monday the 9th of November, that's when our spoiler special for Spectre will be up. And we'll get into everything we couldn't talk about last week. And speaking about spoiler specials, this week Chris McQuarrie came in. We've been hoping that he would for ages. He's finally had some time in his schedule. A lot of time in his schedule, as it turns out. He came in to talk about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I sat down with him and we talked for almost, I'm not kidding, 3 hours. It's an interview that not only answers every question you had about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, but possibly every question you had about every film ever. It's an astonishing interview. He is fantastic, and we will be holding that until the movie's out on Blu-ray. So that's going to be the first week of December, something like that. We're going to put it up now. We're probably going to put it up in its entirety or close to it without us, the idiots, talking about the film afterwards, because that would be too much. But do let us know what you think. I would be very interested to see, do you want to listen to 2.5 hours of one of the greatest screenwriters of our age talking about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, or do you want the more conventional Empire Podcast Water special? Let us know. I'd be very, very intrigued to see what you think.
I was very impressed you did the whole interview hanging onto the side of a plane as well. You haven't mentioned that, but that to me was the most impressive aspect.
I mean, it made the sound recording a bit of a nightmare, but I feel like, you know, we'll be able to edit
that. That's why it took 3 hours
That was just one question.
Writing all the questions down on a bit of paper.
It's just how I get to work, guys. It's just how I get to work. I don't like to make a big deal about it. So, so sorry about the brevity of this week's review section. Normal service will be resumed next week. We guarantee it.
Actually, November is an incredibly busy month for movies, so I think we're going to be, if anything, talking more than usual in the reviews.
I have an idea. Why don't we all recommend a spooky film for listeners to watch this Halloween?
Good idea.
I caught Housebound. I've been wanting to watch it for ages, but Housebound, this newish, I think it was actually made a while ago, but it came out here a bit later, Kiwi horror comedy, which is fantastic, and I recommend it. Peter Jackson, no less, recommended it as one of his favourite films of this year, and it is delightful. I won't say anything else about it because it's got lots of twists and turns in it. It's directed by a guy called Gerard Johnston, and it's very funny. It reminded me of The Frighteners, which is one of my favourite films. It kind of has that kind of tone to it. It's very silly, and it's got an amazing death in it.
Cool.
Fantastic. I really want to see that. So lend me the disc if you have it.
Will do. I think it's on Netflix as well.
It's on Netflix. Perfect. I've got a Netflix subscription. This is good. Other streaming services are available, of course. Hell's bells.
I don't know. I recently rewatched Monster House, which I have a huge soft spot for. So I might say Monster House. If you haven't seen it, it's an animated horror movie for kids, but it's really steeped actually in a lot of horror classics. There's a shot that's directly lifted from Stephen King's It that opens the film, like just absolutely a deliberate homage, and I just think it's really delightful. So I like that, so I would say Monster House, because I'm a bit of a wimp and I don't want to recommend anything actually scary. It's a bit scary. It's just, you know, kids scary, not adult scary.
Scariness is obviously subjective, and I think more so than comedy in a weird way. Someone a few weeks ago tweeted us going, I want you to recommend a really scary film for Halloween, something that will really scare my girlfriend. I was like, well, I don't know if I can, because if I recommended, say, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, which is a film I deeply, deeply love, to someone, they might look at it and go, it's just a bit daft, isn't it? It's Alice Cooper running around killing people with a bike and nonsense about metaphysics. What the hell is that? That's not scary. But, you know, equally, I might find something laughable and someone it might make someone jump out of their skin.
Cube terrified me, and most
Cube's
people
a good one.
Sometimes a PG can scare you a lot more than an 18. I just watched Night of the Demon, the Jack Tourneur movie, sort of basically inspired by Casting of the Runes. And that's a PG. And admittedly, the demon in it looks like the Chewitz monster from the old Chewitz ads, but there are shots in that which are really freaky. There's one where the guy is being chased through the forest and you see the hoof prints of the demon in the kind of the grass behind him. Steam hissing off them. And I don't know how they did it.
The demon was actually added against a Tourneur as well.
Yeah. It would have been better had it not been in it, frankly, but it's still a scary movie.
Absolutely. Basically, but I mentioned Superstition earlier on. That's a fun little haunted house film. Go and check it out. Don't necessarily hunt down any of the ones I mentioned earlier on, the Medusa Touch and Harley Quinn and The Evil. They're all largely terrible. Although the Medusa Touch does have a creepiness to it. But listen, it's Halloween. Don't go wrong with the John Carpenter triple bill. Seriously, just get any of the great John Carpenter horror films and just put them into triple bill of your own designs. Halloween, The Fog, The Thing, and yes, Prince of Darkness, and put them together and you will not go wrong.
Maybe avoid In the Mouth of Madness, which I watched this week.
For the first time,
it's great premise, not so well executed.
Not so well executed, but it does have a certain, yes, madness going
through. It's got Viggo from Ghostbusters 2 in it.
Does it?
Small role. Yeah, he actually plays a kind of goodish guy in it.
Wow.
Yeah, and
there's a fascinating piece online about him, actually. I recommend it. I think it was on, I've forgotten which site it was on, but it's on myself and Nick's Twitter thread at the moment because we were discussing it yesterday. So, he's got a more terrifying backstory than Viggo the Carpathian.
My
God. Do have a read of that.
Oh, and of course, I've been banging on about Halloween 3 all through the podcast, so watch that as well. If you haven't seen Halloween 3, do check it out.
Let's go watch it now.
Let's go and watch it now, because that's it for this week's Emperor Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun. Won't be scary film-related fun. I won't be around, actually. I think, Helen, you'll probably be in the hot seat for that one. Or no longer can we review Spectre as well, I think, by that point. I will be joined by Saoirse Ronan, star of Brooklyn.
Hooray.
You see my accent got a little bit thicker already?
Saoirse
Just
Ronan.
Saying her name, Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
But until that momentous moment, it's goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Nick.
Goodbye.
And you know what?
Now it's time to say goodbye. Say goodbye. No. Say goodbye. Now it's time to say goodbye. Empire Podcast.
See you next week.